Sattvam mamapi chutashrishnivanditam. Karambujam yatvad adhatya sattvatam. Vibharshimam lakshma varne varenya mayaya. Ka ishvarashye hitam uhitam viburiti. Sattvam mamapi chutashrishnivanditam. Karambujam yatvad ahai sattva adhai sattvatam. Vibharshimam lakshma varenya mayaya. Ka ishvarasye hitam uhitum vibhur iti. Satvam mamapya chutashrishnivanditam. Karambujam yattad adhayi sattvatam. Vibharshimam lakshma varenya mayaya. Ka ishvarasye hitam uhitam vibhur iti. Somebody else? Tam ta satishni vanditam. Karambujam yatat adhai sattvatam. Vibharshimam lakshma varenya mayaya. Ad ishvarashye hitam ubhitam viburiti. Sattvam mamapya chutashrishnivanditam. Karambujam yattad adhai sattvatam. Vibharshimam lakshma avirena mayaya. Tad ishvara shahitam udbitam viburiti. Tatvam abid achyuta shishnivanditam. Karambujam yatvat adhai sattvatam. Vibharshimam lakshma varenya mayaya. Ka ishvaraye hitam udhitam vibhuriti. Sattvam mamapya chutashrishnivanditam. Karambujam yatvat adhai sattvatam. Vibharshimam lakshma varenya mayaya. Vishwam. Okay, so, sa, that, tvam, you, mama, of me, api, also, achyuta, O infallible one, Shrishni on the head, Banditam worshipped, Kara Ambujam your lotus hand, Yat which Tat Bayu Adhai placed, Satvatam on the head of the devotees, Vibharshi you maintain, Mam me, Lakshma as an insignia on your chest, Varenya O worshipable one, Mayaya with deceit, Ka who Ishvarasya of the supremely powerful controller, Itam the desires, Uhitam Uhitum to understand by reason and argument, Vibhu is able, Iti thus. Translation. O infallible one, your lotus palm is the source of all benedictions. Therefore, your pure devotees worship it, and you very mercifully place your hand on their heads. I wish that you may also place your hand on my head, for although you already bear my insignia of golden streaks on your chest, I regard this honor as merely a kind of false prestige for me. You show your real mercy to your devotees, not to me. Of course, you are the supreme absolute controller, and no one can understand your motives. Just a word about this ET. Whenever you see ET at the end of a verse, it's usually what it means is that's the end of the section. So we've been talking about this, and now it's finished. So ET is not really part of the verse. It's just it signifies that the end of the section is coming. So now the prayers, this is the last of Lakshmi's prayers. And tomorrow we'll begin another Varsha. We'll be on, where will we be? We'll be somewhere else. I don't know where we will be. Yeah, we'll be Ramyaka Varsha, where Vaivasvata Manu rules, and he appears as Manu, and Vaivasvata Manu will be offering the prayers that follow. So this is the end of Lakshmi's prayers, and that's why this Iti is there. If you see at the end of Prahlad's prayers, you'll also see this word Iti, thus. Or basically it means in conclusion. Okay, so purport. This is as long purport. As Ananta Prabhu said, it's dangerously long. So what I'll do is I'll speak intermittently in the purport. In many places, the Shastras describe the Supreme Personality of Godhead as being more inclined toward his devotees than toward his wife, who always remains on his chest. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 11:14-15, it is stated, Natata me priyatama atma yonir na shankaraha. Nacha shankarshano na srir, naivatma cha yata bhavan. Here, Krishna plainly says that his devotees are more dear to him than Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Shankarshan, the original cause of creation, the goddess of fortune, or even his own self. Elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam 10:9-20, Sukadev Goswami says, Ne mam vrnichyo na bhavo na shrir apyanga samshaya prasadam lebhire gopi yat yat prapa vimuktiyat. The Supreme Lord, who can award liberation to anyone, shows more mercy towards the gopis than Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, or even the goddess of fortune, who is his own wife and is associated with his body. Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam also states, Nayam Sriyanga Unitantare Prasada Svaryochitam Nalina Gandarucham Kutonya Rasot savesya bhujatanda grihita kanta labdha shishamyad udagaj vrajasundarinam. The gopis received benedictions from the Lord that neither Lakshmi Devi nor the most beautiful dancers in the heavenly planets could attain. In the rasa dance, the Lord showed his favor to the most fortunate gopis by placing his arms on their shoulders and dancing with each of them individually. No one can compare with the gopis who received the causeless mercy of the Lord. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that no one can receive the real favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead without following in the footsteps of the gopis. Even the goddess of fortune cannot receive the same favor as the gopis, although she underwent severe austerities and penances for many years. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discusses this point with Vyankatabhata in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjalila 9, 111 through 134. Excuse me, 31. The Lord inquired from Vyankatabhata, "Your worshipable goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, always remains on the chest of Narayan, and she is certainly the most chaste woman in creation. However, my lord is Lord Sri Krishna, a cowherd boy engaged in tending cows. Why is it that Lakshmi, being such a chaste wife, wants to associate with my lord? Just to associate with Krishna, Lakshmi abandoned all transcendental happiness in Vaikuntha and for a long time accepted vows and regulative principles and performed unlimited austerities." Vyankatabhata replied, "Lord Krishna and Lord Narayan are one and the same, but the pastimes of Krishna are more relishable due to their sportive nature. They are very pleasing for Krishna's shakis. Since Krishna and Narayan are both the same personality, Lakshmi's association with Krishna did not break her vow of chastity. Rather, it was in great fun that the goddess of fortune wanted to associate with Lord Krishna. The goddess of fortune considered that her vow of chastity would not be damaged by her relationship with Krishna. Rather, by associating with Krishna, she could enjoy the benefit of the rasa dance. If she wanted to enjoy herself with Krishna, what fault is there? Why are you joking so about this?" Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, "I know that there is no fault in the goddess of fortune, but still, she could not enter into the rasa dance. We hear this from revealed scriptures. The authorities of Vedic knowledge met Lord Ramchandra in Dandakaranya, and by their penances and austerities, they were allowed to enter into the rasa dance. But can you tell me why the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, could not get that opportunity?" To this, Vyankatabhata replied, "I cannot enter into the mystery of this incident. I am an ordinary living being, and my intelligence is limited, and I am always disturbed. How can I understand the pastimes of the Supreme Lord? They are deeper than millions of oceans." Lord Chaitanya replied, "Lord Krishna has a specific characteristic. He attracts everyone's heart by the mellow of his personal conjugal love. By following in the footsteps of the inhabitants of the planet known as Vrajaloka or Goloka Vrindavan, one can attain the shelter of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. However, the inhabitants of that planet do not know that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unaware that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, the residents of Vrindavan, like Nanda Maharaj, Jasoda Devi, and the gopis, treat Krishna as their beloved son or lover. Mother Jasoda accepts him as her son and sometimes binds him to a grinding mortar. Krishna's cowherd boyfriends think he is an ordinary boy and get up on his shoulders. In Goloka Vrindavan, no one has any desire other than to love Krishna. The conclusion is that one cannot associate with Krishna unless he has fully received the favor of the inhabitants of Vrajabhumi. Therefore, if one wants to be delivered by Krishna directly, he must take to the service of the residents of Vrindavan who are unalloyed devotees of the Lord. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Samaniti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nivishesha Shunyavadi Paschacharya Satarane. Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangam Langayate Girim. Yat Kripa Tvam Maham Bande Shri Guru Dinataranam. Paramananda Vardhanam Shri Chaitanya Mishvaram. So, these prayers by Lakshmi Devi are quite special because it's very common that people go to Lakshmi Devi. And here in this verse, in the purport, or in the verse, she talks about the palm of the Lord. But we see that even in the deity, sometimes Radharani, she has her hand up in benediction. And if you look at posters of Lakshmi Devi, you'll always see her with her hand up and money coming out of her hand. She has coins falling from her hand. So this is generally the benediction that people ask for. There's a song that the Indian people chant very often. Jai Jagadish Hari, Swaman Jai Jagadish Hari. And Prabhupada told us that we shouldn't chant it because it asks for various material benedictions. So then we made up some words. We said, give me a house by the sea and a new DVD, Swaman Jaya Jagadish Hari. So that was not the mood of Srila Prabhupada, and it wasn't even the mood of Lakshmi. Lakshmi tried to enter into that Leela of Krishna with his most intimate devotees, but she couldn't get in because she saw Krishna as God. And the gopis, they don't know that Krishna is God. In the story of Bilva Mangal Thakur, which we read here once during the Janmashtami celebration, Bilva Mangal Thakur, he didn't want anything from Krishna. He didn't want any benedictions at all. He didn't want anything. Matter of fact, he poked out his eyes because he didn't want to be distracted by his eyes, which always became attracted to other material allurements. And he didn't have any interest in getting involved with these material things. But unfortunately, we may not have that level of purity that we still have these desires for material things. And the Bhagavatam says better to go to Krishna than Lakshmi. So in India, the Congress party, they have the hand of Krishna like this. that's their symbol. You know, in America, they have a donkey and an elephant, the Democrats and the Republicans. One is a donkey and the other is an elephant. and you know which one's which. It doesn't really matter. But in the Congress party and whatever the other party is of the Indian government, there's a lotus flower and there's a hand, the lotus palm of Krishna with the lines of fortune. So if you worship me by voting for me, you get all good fortune, meaning the economy will be good. The coins coming out of Lakshmi's hand. So here Lakshmi is saying, and in the previous verse also she's saying, if you really want material enjoyment, then come to me. Even Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, even they come to me. They come to me because they think they can get material wealth. But when Prabhupada gave me my name, he said, your name is Lakshmi Moni. Mani, it actually is the jewel of Lakshmi. And he said it means the servant of the goddess of fortune, who never likes to stay in one place, who always travels around finding new and wonderful ways of serving Krishna's lotus feet. So Lakshmi is chanchala. Chanchala means she never stays in one place. You grab her and you think, I got it. And then the next minute she's gone. She leaves you crying because you thought money talks, but it often says goodbye. So this quality of Lakshmi Devi, people are always chasing after her. And she says in the previous verse, 22, That even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, as well as the other demigods and demons, they undergo severe austerities and to receive my benedictions. My benedictions. They want my benedictions. But my benedictions, Lakshmi's benedictions, they're material benedictions. They're benedictions of wealth, prosperity, material prosperity. But she says, I do not favor anyone, however great they may be, unless they're always engaged in the service of your lotus feet. We have the story of Rukmini and Sudama. Sudama Vipra was a pure devotee of Krishna. Matter of fact, our acharyas say that his only attachment was that he was attached to being detached. He was attached to renunciation. So the story has it that Sudama was sent the request of his wife, who was also a pure devotee. And that's not like she was a materialist and she said, listen, I'm sick and tired of living like this. Go to Krishna and get some money, will you? I know he has a lot of money. But, no, she didn't say that. She said, you know, you have a friend, Krishna, your children are starving, we're starving. If you go to him, he'll help us. Whatever way he helps us, he'll help us. So please, take shelter of Krishna. And he thought, wow, I'm going to go see Krishna. I'm actually going to get to see Krishna. So he was enthused. But then he thought, well, I can't go to see Krishna without bringing something. So she went begging. And of course, you know, the neighborhood, when you live in a neighborhood, and she lived in a neighborhood where people were poor, because they were poor. So when she went begging, she only got some palmful of chipped rice, flat rice, broken rice, not basmati, special quality, imported from the Himalayas rice, but just cheap chipped rice. So she got that, and she tied it in a piece of ripped cloth, because they didn't have any wrapping paper, they didn't have any fancy way to package it. So she tied in a piece of ripped cloth, and she sent Sudama to Krishna, who was in Dwarka. And so Sudama walked to Dwarka. He walked there. And he was very skinny, and he was quite dirty. You know how your clothes, after you wash them in a river or something with no soap for a while, they get kind of looking eternally dirty. You can't get them clean, although technically they're clean. And so he had been walking on the dusty roads for a long time, no shoes on. And then he got to Dwarka, and there were all these palaces, and he didn't know what to do. He was like, wow, where do I find Krishna in all these palaces? And so he went to the gatekeeper, and he asked, where do I find Krishna? He's my friend. And the gatekeeper was trained always to let Brahmins in. So here was a Brahmin, even though he didn't look like he was in very good shape. He said, well, actually, he's in all the palaces. So you can pick whichever palace, because he's in every one of them. That was another, wow, every palace. Okay, so he chose a palace and he walked in. It was Rukmini's palace. Rukmini is the goddess of fortune. So he walked in and Krishna dropped everything. He was engaged in activities with his children, with his friends, with his wife. And he dropped everything and he went and greeted Sudama as if he hadn't seen him in a million years. Well, who is this wonderful person? Everybody was wondering, who is this guy? He's so skinny and he's not very clean. He's not opulent. He's not dressed nicely. But somehow Krishna is stopping everything and greeting this person and then washing his feet himself and throwing the water on all of us and so many things. And Rukmini was watching and wondering, what is going on here? So they stayed and they walked around and they talked. Krishna put him to rest for a while, gave him a massage. And then it was time for Sudama to leave. And as Sudama was leaving, Krishna noticed that he had a package, some little thing on his belt. And so he grabbed it because he knew that Sudama would never offer it. He was embarrassed and he didn't feel comfortable in speaking up. Maybe he was from Slovenia. So he pulled out that package of rice and he started to eat it. Right, and he took one handful and another, and he was about to take another, and Rukmini stopped him. She said, don't eat any more of that rice because I already owe this guy, right? I'm going to be indebted to this person. I can barely give him sufficient wealth just because he rendered that service to you, because you enjoyed that rice and his company so much that I already have a debt that I can hardly pay. If you eat any more of that rice, I'll have to live in his house. I won't be able to stay here. I'll have to stay and serve him. So this is the power of that, of devotion. And Sudama didn't ask for wealth. He didn't even want wealth. He was sent to ask for help, but he didn't. He forgot. Or he was, yeah, it didn't even occur to him. It's not that he forgot. He just didn't even think of it. He was so happy to be in Krishna's association. And he was starting to walk back, and he was thinking, oh, my friend Krishna, it was so nice to see him. And I my wife, she's going to be really angry with me because I didn't ask him for anything. But he probably knew that if he gave me anything, then it would be problematic for me. I'd just fall down. So he was walking, and then he came to where his house had been, and he saw this big house. And this lady came to greet him, and she was all dressed nicely and everything, and he was like, who is this? And then realized it was his wife. So he had gotten everything that he was supposed to get. Krishna gave him everything, but he didn't ask for anything. So this is Lakshmi's position here. She's saying, and it's interesting that Prabhupada quotes quite a bit of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this very funny discussion, you can read it, between Venkatabhata and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is trying to convince Venkatabhata, who was a worshipper of Lakshmi Narayan, that worshipping Lakshmi Narayan was an inferior position to worshipping Radha and Krishna. And so they were having a little argument, kind of a joking argument. I've seen it done in dramas many times, and it's quite amusing. But the point is that when Lord Chaitanya said, then why is it that Lakshmi Devi couldn't enter into the rasa dance, even though she did severe austerities to enter into the rasa dance, she couldn't do it. Why is that? Venkatabhata couldn't answer. He couldn't answer. Because he also was in that mood of awe and reverence, love, that devotion with awe and reverence. And so he also couldn't understand the wonderful nature of that pastime of, or the pastimes with the gopis, with Mother Jasoda, with Nanda Maharaj, of the Vrajavasis, because they loved Krishna, but they didn't know he was God. Right? In that play of Bhava Mangal Thakur, at the end, Krishna says to him, Bilva Mangal says to Krishna, I think you know more about Krishna than you're telling me. And Krishna, he says, tell me a story about Krishna. Come on, you must know something. You live in Vrindavan. Tell me something about Krishna. And Krishna says that when in the morning the cowherd boys come to take out Krishna to play, and they get disturbed because Mother Jasoda fusses over him so much. She wants him to dress properly, and she makes sure he has sweets, and then she calls him back, maybe you didn't take enough. And she asks the cowherd boys to help her dress him because she wants to put so many ornaments on him, it would take a long time, and they're all waiting, and they're really impatient. And so she's saying, Vishala, please put the ankle bells on Krishna's feet. And Krishna hits him over the head with his flute. And then Krishna says, but they don't know that Krishna is God. They don't even think of Krishna as God. They just think that Krishna is their most dear friend. That's all. They just think of Krishna as their most dear friend. And when Bilva Mangala hears that phrase, Krishna is my most dear friend, then he realizes that this person he's been talking to is actually the Supreme Lord. It's actually Krishna himself, who came to him in his hour of need and became his most dear friend. And now he was seeing, yeah, he's our most dear friend. So every one of us, this is Lakshmi's prayers, the gist of her prayers, is that every one of us is looking for that most dear friend. We think it's going to come in a husband. We think it's going to come in a wife. We think it's going to come in children. We think it's going to come from somewhere outside over there. We're going to earn it. We're going to get money, and then we're going to buy it. With somehow or other, what we're looking for that's filling the space, Nectar of Devotion describes that there's a space in our heart, and we try to fill it up with everything we can find. Give me a house by the sea and a new DVD, Swamin Jaya Jagadisha Hari. Just that hole in our heart, we want to fill it up. There's one story of a man who has four husbands, or you could say a man who has four wives or a wife who has four husbands, doesn't matter, it's the same. And the first wife, he was so attached to her. He took such nice care of her. He really tried very, very hard to take really good care of her. And then the second wife, well, he was really attached to her too. And he took good care of her also, but he had this feeling in his heart that she might leave him someday. So he was always a little nervous about her because he thought, I'm not sure I have trust that she'll stay with me forever. So he tried to be really nice to her, tried to keep her, but he had this feeling. And the third wife, well, he didn't really like her that much. It wasn't that she was beautiful or anything, but she took care of the children, and she was very dutiful. And when he needed solace, when he needed someone's shoulder to cry on, or it was a hard day, and he just needed someone who would be a rock, then he would go to her, because she was always very supportive. And the fourth wife, well, he didn't really have much to do with her at all. Actually, he forgot about her more than anything else. He never had anything to do with her. And then one day he found out that he was terminally ill. He was going to die soon. And of course, we're all going to die, but he was thinking, I'm going to live forever, like everybody does. But then he got really sick, and he realized that he was going to die. So he went to his first wife, the one he really was attached to, and he said, darling, I've been so attached to you for my whole life. Will you stay with me at the moment of death? She said, no way. I'll go to the funeral pyre and then I'm out of here. I'm gone. And so then he was shocked. Then he went to the second wife. And he's the one he really liked. He took such good care of her, but he kind of had this feeling. He said, will you come with me? Will you go with me when I leave? She said, no way. When you leave, I'm going to go to other people. And I'll find somebody else. I'll find somebody else who will take care of me, someone else who will get pleasure from me. And he was really shocked. And then he went to that wife who was so supportive of him, and she said, he asked her, will you come with me? And she said, no, I'm sorry, I can't come with you. I'll hold your hand until you pass away, but then I'll just keep doing my duties and take care of the children. I'm sorry, I can't go with you. And then he heard a voice in the back. And little voice said, I'll go with you. He said, you turned around, and there was the wife that he had ignored his whole life. He had ignored her. He hadn't paid any attention to her. And she was saying, I'll go with you. And he thought, wow, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize that you were so affectionate to me, that you cared about me so much. I neglected you. And now you're the only one who'll go with me. So our acharyas explained that these four wives, all of us have these four wives or four husbands. The first is the body. We're so attached. We take care of it so much. But when we leave in the funeral pyre, it's gone. Finished. I'm out of here. And the second wife is our possessions. We take such nice care of them. We polish them. We protect them. We get insurance for them. We lock them up. But when we die, they go to someone else. Right? Someone else will take them. Someone else will enjoy them. They won't be able to go with us. And the third wife is the family. We take so much strength from the family, the dear children, and support. They support me when I need support. But in the end, when I leave, they won't be able to come either. They can help me before I die, but once I die, something can't Can't do anything. And the last wife? The wife is a super soul that we ignore most of the time. With us all the time. Comes with us in every body. Dog body, cat body, donkey body, ant body, mosquito body, human body, so many different bodies. And we ignore that Supreme Personality of Godhead who so kindly comes with us. And life after life, birth after birth, body after body, he waits for us to look his way. Right? Two little birds sitting in the tree. One is Krishna, one is me. He is waiting day by day for me to turn and look his way. But we generally don't. We're too busy eating the fruits of the tree. Then we forget about this bird that's waiting for us to turn to him. And so, ignored, but still willing to keep trying, birth after birth after birth, to tap you on the shoulder, give you a kick in the pants, somehow or other wake you up. Hello! You're going to die again and again, and you don't know what body you're going to take. You don't know where you're going to go. Please get smart. Please notice me. Please worship me. Please serve me. Because by serving me, you'll be happy. Not only now, but for lives to come. And this is Lakshmi's gift to us. It's the only thing she gives us, is that in these prayers, she gives us direction. Don't think that I can satisfy you. Don't put your hopes in false relationships. Because those false relationships, they'll be there today and they'll be gone tomorrow. And maybe you need some support in this life. You need a job. Maybe you need a husband, a wife. Maybe you need a house. Maybe you need... But don't be fooled that those things are going to give you the eternal satisfaction and happiness that you're looking for. They won't. And when you put the more energy you put into them, the more you'll be hurt when they let you down. We was talking last night a little about trust. And one thing I neglected to say was that when you trust somebody, you leave yourself very vulnerable. So we're very reluctant to offer trust. Trust is something we hold on to. And we don't give it easily, because when we give it, we open our heart. And when we open our heart, we become vulnerable. Vulnerable to the greatest pain, and we hope for the greatest joy. That's what we're hoping for, the greatest pleasure. But along with the ability to get the greatest pleasure comes with the ability to get the greatest pain from the material world. Because if we open our heart to the materialist, pain will come, for sure, pain will come. We will be let down, just like this man when he went to each wife at the moment of death and was let down by each one of them, one after the other. All his expectations couldn't be satisfied. But when we put our faith, our trust in Krishna, Krishna is the only one that can really be trusted. Because he's got the whole world in his hands. Used to be a song. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. There's an insurance company in America that it has two hands, and inside is your house. Because they got their house in their hands. And that's not a joke. They have your house in their hands. But they're not taking care of it for you. They're taking care of it for themselves. Everybody is in it, what's in it for me. And when the contract expires, or if they can find a loophole in the contract, that what's in it for me will make them first, you second. But for Krishna, Krishna is always anxious to take care of his devotees. He's Bhaktivatsala. So Bhaktivatsala, Ananta Prabhu was talking the other day, that's such an amazing quality of Krishna. When we see Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita for the first time, it's, hey, Chela, take me in between the two armies, please. Take my chariot in between the two armies. Yes, sir. And off he goes. And in the Bhagavatam also, the first time we see Krishna is he's serving the devotees. Krishna is a servant of his devotees. I remember once I was walking down the stairs in Mayapur. It was years and years and years ago, almost 50 years ago. And it was the Lotus Building, which was barely finished. And Jai Pitaka Maharaj used to do this thing where he would ask questions at the end, we would go on the walk, and then he would ask questions, and we would stand on the stairs, and he would throw flowers if we got the right answer. So the question that he asked was, who is most dear to Krishna? So everybody was saying, Radharani is the most dear to Krishna, and different things. And I said, it was the only time I ever answered the question, I said, the person who gives Krishna to others, who makes devotees. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he is most dear to me, and he threw his garland on me. So this is the essence of our relationship with Guru and Krishna, that we have so much affection for Krishna. We're so happy in our relationship with Krishna that we want to give Krishna to everybody. And it's interesting because in every other relationship we have, we protect it from everybody else. We can't share it because if we share it, then we have less, right? What wife wants to have a co-wife? You know, we hear about women, the marriages, these kings who had umpteen wives. But in this day and age, especially, if you say to somebody you want to have a co-wife, they're like, forget it, you know? No one can think about sharing their husband or their wife with somebody else. It's just not, it doesn't compute. Because there's so much jealousy and so much attachment and so much envy. So I have this thing, and maybe it gives me some pleasure, but the fact that it gives me pleasure makes me hide it. I keep it hidden. I don't distribute it. And wealth, also, I lock it up and I try to protect it with millions of passwords that have uppercase and lowercase and funny letters and different signs because someone's going to try and find my password and they're going to try and get my wealth and I don't want them to get my wealth, so I try to hide it. I insure it so that if it gets damaged, I can get money for it. We're so attached because, and we know that there's a finite amount of it. If we give it away, if we share it, it's gone. We have less. And we can't bear that lessness. That lessness doesn't sit well with us. But Krishna is infinite. And the more we share him, the more we get. The more we give him out, the more we have. And there's always more to go around. Right? That's why Lakshmi here in this purport, Prabhupada says that the gopis in Vrindavan were the most fortunate because Krishna expanded himself and danced with each one of them. Even though there were thousands and thousands of gopis. Lakshmi Sahastra Satasan Brahma Sayavyama. So there were so many Lakshmis and so many goddesses of fortune, but Krishna, he had a relationship with each of the gopis and each of the gopas. When the gopis would sit and eat lunch with Krishna, Krishna was sitting and each gopa thought that Krishna was looking at him, talking to him, interacting with him. Because Krishna has a personal relationship with each devotee, and there's no shortage. Just like Ananta was describing the scene, we see that picture. It's on the Brihad Bhagavatamrita when Gop Kumar enters into Goloka Vrindavan, and Krishna sees him across the field because Gop is waiting. Gop Kumar is waiting and waiting, and when he, where's Krishna? Where's Krishna? He's in the pasture. He's coming. He's just now coming. And he's watching, and he sees this dust cloud because the cows are coming. And the cowherd boys are coming, and there's a big cloud of dust, and he's watching it get closer. And then Krishna sees him, and he goes running to him, and he grabs him, and they both fall on the floor in ecstasy, unconscious. So but Krishna has that relationship with everybody in Goloka Vrindavan. He was just welcoming back. Where you been? I was looking for you yesterday, but you weren't there. And I'm so happy to see you today. And then let's go to play and let's go to eat with all the cowherd boys, with all the gopis, with all the elderly gopis and the younger gopis and the cowherd men and the cowherd boys. All the trees. It's described that when Krishna first entered the forest of Vrindavan because he was asked to take care of the calves, right? They moved to Vrindavan just before Krishna became old enough to take care of the calves. And even though Krishna was very small and Mother Jasoda was a little scared that the cows were so big, even the calves, and he was so small, she agreed. And so it became, Prabhupada says, it was Krishna's job to take care of the calves. He had to take care of the calves. So the forest The animals in the forest, the trees in the forest, the grass in the forest, the flowers in the forest, the clouds in the forest, the peacocks in the forest. They'd been waiting for Krishna to come in Vrindavan for a whole bunch of years because Krishna was too young. He couldn't go by himself. And now they heard Krishna's coming. He's actually going to come to Vrindavan. He's going to enter the forest. And so they planned to greet him. Every one of them had something to offer. The grass became super soft. Huh? And the cloud made shade so that Krishna would be cool. And the trees, they bowed down full of fruits and flowers. And the fragrance of the flowers came so that everything was like, and the peacocks were making their sounds and showing their feathers, and the other birds were singing beautiful songs. So when Krishna entered Vrindavan, all of them were there to greet him and offer that thing which they could offer. They made that offering to Krishna. And Krishna reciprocated with each one of them, with every one of them, with love and devotion, with an exchange of love. So this Lord of ours, this Krishna, he's really worthy of our trust and our worship because he's infinite and he can love everybody. He sits in everyone's heart. Doesn't, if he's in my heart, when Hiranyakashipu was, or I think it was Hiranyaksha, Hiranyaka was saying that, where is this Vishnu? He's stuck in the heart of the devotee and he can't come out. But actually he's not stuck there. He goes there out of his causeless mercy to guide us, to give us direction, so that we can come back to him in Goloka Vrindavan. So I'll stop there. It's late. Maybe there'll be some question. Maybe not. Yes. Hare Krishna. Mm-hmm. Maybe unrealistic. Yeah, as soon as possible, we should get rid of our false ego. But it's unfortunately easier said than done. You know, we hang on to our false ego almost unconsciously, that we're so conditioned. So yes, we want to give it up. But when it gets hurt, when our expectations get unmet, or we put faith in somebody and they hurt us, then we shy away, and it takes us time to rebuild the faith, to move forward again. And it takes great determination and great dedication and great trust in Krishna and also philosophical understanding, because if our expectations are realistic, if we don't expect people to be perfect, if we don't expect people to satisfy all our needs, if we don't expect people to be the way we want them to be, if we understand that everybody's got their stuff that they have to deal with, then we won't expect things that are unrealistic and we won't be so vulnerable. We won't be hurt so easily. But we go into relationships expecting something that's unrealistic, and therefore we get hurt. We get beat up. So we on the material level, we can discuss expectations and we can try to make them realistic. But as long as we have material desires, some of our expectations are going to be unrealistic, because we're looking for our happiness from material things, and that's unrealistic. It's not going to happen. Because at the very least, we're eternal and they're not. That relationship with that body, that relationship with that thing, that relationship is not eternal because that thing is not eternal, that body is not eternal. We say, I love you, but I don't know who I am, I don't know who you are, and I don't know what love is. So that's a problem, right? We say, I love you, but I don't know who I am, and I don't know who you are, and I don't know what love is, so how I can say I love you? And we look for those three words. We want to hear those three words. That's practically the goal of people's lives, is to hear, I love you. And we don't even know what it means. We don't know who's saying it, and we don't know who we are. So it's an unrealistic. And so we have to mix realism, philosophical knowledge of the absolute truth into our understanding of the functioning of the material world and the spiritual world so that we can give up our attachment, our false ego. It doesn't happen easily. Of course, it could happen in a second, but good luck. I mentioned last night that I had asked, because humility is a very important factor in that, and I had asked Bhojan Prabhu, how do you become humble? And he said, live. Just live, and life will make you humble. So depending on how hard you live life, how fast you become, learn the lessons. That sometimes we learn the lessons quick, and sometimes we learn the lessons temporarily, and then we forget them. Right? We forget them. And sometimes we stay wise. Pure devotees, they stay wise. Anybody else? Yes. How do you stay wise? Keep your eyes open, because you'll learn from other people's lessons too, not just yours. It's less painful a little bit. But if you're wise and if you keep your eyes open and you're learning, then you'll learn. First class intelligence, you learn without having to experience suffering. Second class intelligence is you see other people suffering and you think, I'm not going to go there. Third class intelligence, you still don't get it. You have to go there and get smashed. Fourth class intelligence, you think, well, I got smashed that time, but if I do it differently, it'll work out differently that time. And we do it again and again. So at least be second class intelligent, that see other people suffering and realize that that's the way it is. Everyone's getting sick. Everyone's dying. Extra, read all about it. The death rate is 100%. It always has been, it always will be. And disease is part of the package. You can't avoid it. And old age also. So, you know, when you understand this, it's just a matter of time, then it helps you to be wise. But you have to also preach to your mind, which means a daily dose of the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Association of Devotees, chanting the holy name. Because that daily dose keeps you fortified, keeps you aware. Otherwise, you go back to sleep. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.